This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are discussing Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, chapters 3 and 4, Will and Won't, and Horace Slughorn. In these chapters, the Dursleys get reprimanded by the Big D.
The Big D. I like that. Yes.
Double D. Big Double D. Dumbledore.
Double D. Awesome. As if he couldn't get cooler.
And then we meet an old colleague of Dumbledore's who Harry has mixed feelings about.
Yeah, I'm with Harry with this one. It's an interesting cat.
Yeah. Alrighty then. But first we've got chapter 3, Will and Won't. Which, it starts off with Harry just snoring, like, plastered against the glass window, just like...
Yeah, I like how this was, like, set up, because it very much was kind of, like, he presents it, you know, it seemed to more be focused on the items around him more than what he was actually doing.
Yeah, so this in some way... Recapping specifically what has gone on since the shit hit the fan at the ministry.
Yes, because this is the first, and we're on chapter 3, and this is the first time we've had, like, we're in the Dursley's house, which usually that comes earlier, and Harry is, like, present. So,
So first we get an article about Harry Potter, the Chosen One.
Oh my gosh.
Which, again, I just finished watching Obi-Wan miniseries, so Chosen One, I just think of Anakin.
And I think of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, so, but which we've talked about that before.
Yep. Yeah, because, again, the press is having a field day because, you know, they're talking about there was some sort of something went down at the Hall of Prophecies, and the ministry won't even confirm that such a place exists.
This ministry. It's kind of like our government and aliens.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, let's see. And who is also known to have been in the ministry on the night in question. Some are going as far to call Potter the Chosen One, believing that the prophecy names him as the only one who will be able to rid us of he who must not be named. For that speculation, they're not wrong.
No, they're not. And
for one.
Yeah, and I think Harry even brings this up later on. But yeah, they've kind of got it figured out, which...
Yep. And then the next newspaper clipping is something we've already seen in the flesh because we saw Scrimgeour, you know, talking to the minister and all the dynamics with Fudge and all that.
Right, yeah.
So the only bit of new information that this news article gives is that within hours of Scrimgeour taking office, he tried to have some sort of conversation with Albus Dumbledore that apparently didn't seem to go well.
Yeah, but we are not privy to that conversation in its entirety quite yet, are we?
No, we are not. And then just goes on that ministry is committed to the safety of Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. And then what do we got? We've got a little pamphlet about protecting your home and family against dark forces.
What was this? Okay, so I kind of felt like this is reminiscent of something, and I could not place it. Was it supposed to, you know, be like a bomb scare, or I just, this pamphlet, while very silly, knowing what we know, you know, it felt a little kind of...
If anything, it kind of makes me think of, wasn't there that scare, like, in the 90s, like, the Stranger Danger crap?
Yeah, Stranger Danger, absolutely. I grew up with a little bit of that, so...
Yeah, I'm a little young to have fully remembered it, but I have heard it mentioned in passing, and so, like, I know it was something that was going on.
And found in, you know, some sort of truth, Johnny Gosh, I think was his name, was the little boy that was abducted. And he was, I believe, you know, he was riding his bike and he went to go run a movie and somebody abducted him. It's a very tragic story. And I know that was part of it. You know, if we're talking the 90s, it was also the Satanic Panic.
Oh, yeah. The Satanic, which Harry Potter got the brunt of in the late 90s.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This, gosh. A lot of weird things happening, but the Stranger Danger thing was quite real during that time. So,
yeah. So it just makes me think of, you know, the first bit of advice they list is you are advised not to leave the house alone. And I remember being told this, like, you know, as part of like prep for going to Morocco, because unfortunately, not that it doesn't exist in America, but, you know, just has street sexual harassment in Arab countries because, you know, they have certain perceptions of Western women, which they do nothing to try and, you know, dismantle, because us being whores fits nicely into their sexually frustrated lives.
I would not adhere to that. I would disappoint some people.
Yeah, but, anyway, so just, you know, them saying, like, you shouldn't leave the house alone, and that's what they always tell, like, you know, the women and the girls of the group, but it's just, like, it's not realistic. Like, you just have to go out and do stuff, get groceries and, like, other things. You cannot constantly be reliant on, you know, people and be inconveniencing them. And so, yeah, that just reminded me all of the ones that, you know, if I tell someone something what happened, again, whether condescending or just genuine trying to help, I was like, oh, maybe you could go with someone else like next time. And it's like, I can't always do that though.
Yeah, it's hard. And I mean, and so much of the onus is on women, like just with our society, you know, it's our job to keep everybody at bay. And by that, you know,
completely disappear from public life.
Basically. Yeah. And yeah, that's, it is a hard time being a woman, and I won't argue. I mean, it's just in general, I mean, and I'm thinking particularly in the United States, living in a city, you know, there are certain hours of the day that it's like, yeah, maybe don't leave the house. And then sometimes it's kind of like impossible, but you always have to, I mean, how many of us, when we leave the house, have our key, you know, in a certain way, or carry brass knuckles with us, or, you know, what's it?
Or just wear a lot of earrings to be both fashionable and have a makeshift brass knuckle.
There you go. It sucks to leave the house and then kind of question, like, what I always do. I'm like, okay, if I'm walking by myself, how do I make myself less, like, easy to grab? But those are things women have to think about. And
I fortunately only have to think about those in town. Again, another benefit of living out in the boonies as a Disney princess with my deer and raccoons.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
My biggest thing when I walk out the door, specifically walk out my front door in a gated community in the boonies, it's just like, make sure I don't, like, you know, run into the deer when I turn the corner.
That's preferable. Yeah.
Yeah, there's two bucks that are now, like, you know, grazing around here, and their little budding antlers are so cute.
Aww. Oh, that's cute. I love the little baby deers.
Yep. So anyway, agree on security questions with close friends and family.
Yeah. Yep.
And then, should the dark mark appear on any dwelling place, do not enter. No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty obvious right there.
Unconfirmed sightings suggest that the Death Eaters may now be using in theory. Any sightings should be reported to the Ministry immediately, which we get a further explanation from Dumbledore later. But now zombies have appeared.
Yeah, yeah. This was This was, it made me think of you and Nat's podcast with Game of Thrones, with the White Walkers.
The White Walkers, indeed. Because, again, I'm not, never watched Walking Dead. Like, I'm, ironically, the only zombie movie I've ever liked is World War Z. Like, I'm just not the biggest fan of, like, just the banal grossness of zombies. I prefer my refined, sexy vampires. Even though the original vampires were basically zombies, but
true. And I think this is the kind of horror realm where we kind of part a little bit. I did watch The Walking Dead up to a point, and then it just got to be like
ridiculous. That's what I've heard from most people who have watched it.
And I would bet a lot of people, it was when they killed off Glenn. Now, I didn't have much of an issue. I wasn't heartbroken about Glenn's death, but the way it was presented was just so ridiculous that I was just like, I can't hang anymore. So there was some good zombie stuff, but that's not like my creature of the moment that I usually gravitate toward. You know, we're both vampire people, I
think. Mm-hmm. Okay. So after this hopeless, ridiculous pamphlet, we get a little visual of a personal letter that Harry has received from Dumbledore, and Dumbledore is saying, like, please, you know, I would like to pick you up on Friday at 11 p.m. to escort you to the Burrow, where you have been invited to spend the remainder of your school holidays. I'm yours most sincerely, Albus Dumbledore.
So I work with somebody who types emails exactly like this, like, if it's convenient, if you please, could, you know, so I don't know. That's what it reminded me of when I was reading this.
I don't say I am yours most sincerely. Like, you know, I always, whenever is most convenient for you, or the killer, this is a friendly reminder.
Oh gosh.
Yes. Friendly.
Please pay attention to my email.
Yeah. This friendly reminder, like, answer this or I will kill you.
Yeah, I know. So I was discussing this person that writes like this with a colleague, and her take was it's very like passive aggressive way of communicating. And I was just like, I mean, sometimes it's kind of refreshing because most of the time it's like, can you send me this like now? Okay.
Yeah. Usually just add a please in there, but then being too flowery again kind of possibly opens it up to passive aggression.
She leans on the passag side, so.
So, Harry, all he's done to prep for Dumbledore is to put Hedwig in her cage. He hasn't packed anything else because literally he has abandonment issues and doesn't trust Dumbledore to show up.
And is experiencing some symptoms of depression, I think we learn later. This is very much
depression and behavior. PTSD and just not, and again, like, and just his whole world of, you know, childhood of abandonment and things like that. But also specifically, Dumbledore has only very recently come clean to him, like spent the whole year ignoring him. So that isn't without basis.
Right. And he's, I mean, so yeah, that is a big part of it. And we talk about kind of the other bigger part in the next chapter, which is the loss of Sirius, but.
Mm-hmm. So. But the minute the street lamps go out in front of number 4 Privet Drive, Harry wakes up. He's like, oh shit, he's here.
Somebody was good on their word.
Yes. And Harry can hear Dumbledore knock on the door and Vernon answers. And it's like, good evening.
And of course, Dursley, Vernon is like, what the hell is this? Because they describe Dumbledore and he is like, I don't get the impression Dumbledore ever really cared what anybody thought about him, but he is definitely like full wizarded out here.
Yeah, because he
wizardedness.
Yeah, because he's in the full like Merlin garb with the waist long hair and beard, pointed hat, like jewel embroidered robes.
This is how he should appear all the time. But.
Mm-hmm. Judging by your look of stunned disbelief, Harry did not warn you that I was coming.
Yeah, well.
And Vernon's like, I don't mean to be rude. It's like, yet sadly, accidental rudeness occurs alarmingly often. Dumbledore finished the sentence gravely.
Thank God.
Dumbledore just loves trolling.
Yes.
With the Dursleys.
And he's so good at it. And I feel like sometimes it just kind of flies over the Dursleys' heads.
Yep. And he goes to Petunia's like, ah, yes, we have corresponded.
Oh, yeah. The Howler. Remember that, Miss Petunia?
Mm-hmm. And then, and this must be your son, Dudley.
Okay. We're going to get to a discussion point here later, but about okay. Dudley.
And then Harry notices something about what's up with Dumbledore's hand.
The mystery remains. I have no idea. I'm assuming it's a wizarding accident of some sort, obviously. But, or he touched some, I don't know, man. Yeah.
So now his right hand, all his fingers are like blackened and shriveled.
Stress me out. I don't know what the deal is.
What was your immediate thought? It's like, oh my God, the all-powerful Dumbledore has a wound on his hand. That wasn't healed immediately.
It reminded me of this video I saw of a person who had frostbite on their hand. Mm-hmm. So their hand was like completely black and they lost their hand. So I'm hoping that is not the same fate for Mr. Dumbledore. I don't think it will be, but that's what it made me think of right away. But I have no idea. Like, I figure he touched. Okay, here's my theory. So Amy can laugh at me later. I feel like he may have touched an object that had like an ill effect or something, but
that was cursed in some capacity.
Well, there's the bless you, or I don't know what to say when people do that. Witches, when they touch silver, is that right? Sometimes silver becomes blackened. I thought that was
werewolves and vampires.
Something with silver. I would have to look at witch lore, but, basically silver and supernatural creatures, I think.
Yeah, which the whole thing of vampires not seeing in their reflections, that's specifically because of the silver, and old school mirrors were lined with silver, but nowadays they're lined with aluminum. Therefore, even if vampires existed under that premise, they should be able to have reflections in modern mirrors because it ain't silver.
I think when you told me that, now that drives me absolutely crazy, and any vampire thing, I'm like, you should see yourself. That's not silver. Because rarely are vampires in modern day in like, you know, an old, I mean, sometimes they are in an old house, I guess. I don't know. But so I don't know. Maybe he touched something he should not have.
Mm-hmm. That is one theory. Moving on. Put a pin in that. We'll get back to it.
I know I'm wrong.
And then, So it starts off with Dumbledore says, well, Harry, a difficulty has arisen which I hope you will be able to solve for us. By us, I mean the Order of the Phoenix. But first of all, I must tell you that Sirius's will was discovered a week ago and that he left you everything he owned.
Now, if I may, I wasn't really sure about this because Sirius was, I kind of forgot who he was. I just keep thinking about him being on the run. And I didn't even think about his, like, possessions that he might have.
Well, just his status as fugitive or not, he was the last male descendant of this very prominent wizarding family.
That's exactly like I omitted that from my brain, and then it's, you know, kind of through this, it's like, hey, you've got more gold, which I love that he says this in front of the Dursleys. It's great.
Yeah, and tactful Vernon is like, his godfather's dead. He's been left a house.
What an asshole.
Yeah. So, obviously, the problem that Dumbledore presents to Harry is that Sirius has left you number 12 Grimmauld Place. And Harry's like, I don't want it. You can keep using it. And he's like, that's very generous. We have, however, vacated the building temporarily. Why? And Dumbledore goes on to explain that even though it was Sirius's intent to give Harry the house because it's such a, you know, old school pure blood wizarding family, there may be other enchantments at play to prevent Sirius's wishes from being carried out. And traditionally it would go to the next male in line, but there is no male anymore. Therefore, it would revert to the oldest relative, any relative, male or female. And that in this case would be Bellatrix Black Lestrange.
Don't really think we want to side with her on this situation.
And it's like, well, what, you know, what do we do? And Dumbledore's like, there's a simple test. And what did you think of what happened next?
Of course, Creature was going to show up. And I thought it was very clever of Mr. Black's, Mr. Sirius Black's part to, you know, do this. I love that he shows up with, you know, in front of the Dursleys, and the Dursleys are, of course, going to freak out because Creature isn't the most aesthetically pleasing. He's not probably very athletic either, but aesthetically pleasing, like, being to darken their doorstep. But yeah.
And Creature is screaming his head off, like, Creature won't go to the Potter brat.
Creature, chill. That's
yeah. And Dumbledore says, you know, give him an order. If he is truly passed into your ownership, he will be forced to obey.
Yeah, I like
and, that. And, you know, he's screaming, won't. And all Harry can think of is, Creature, shut up.
And he does.
Yes. And what we got? After a few seconds of frantic gulping, he threw himself face forward onto the carpet and beat the floor with his hands and feet, giving himself over to a violent but entirely silent tantrum.
This guy. Oh my god. Well, so good.
So that is taken care of. And so now Dumbledore and the Order no longer have to fear that either Creature or Grimmauld Place will fall into the hands of Bellatrix.
Yeah. Thank goodness for that, because Bellatrix could really do some damage, I'm sure.
Indeed. And Harry's like, I don't have to keep him with me, do I? And so Harry goes, is like, sends Creature off to go work at the Hogwarts kitchens with the other elves.
Good on Dumbledore for that little power of suggestion to be like, here's how you can get rid of this guy. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then also Harry, inheriting everything, has also inherited Buckbeak.
I almost forgot about old Buckbeak, and they changed his name though because of the whole debacle, and he becomes
Witherwings.
Witherwings, now back in Hagrid's care. So that's
yes, great. And then so that's all like the technicalities of the will, but Dumbledore is like, just one more thing, and he goes to the Dursleys, and he's like, well, one interesting thing I kind of honed in on is, like, as you know, Harry comes of age in a year's time. No, said Aunt Petunia, speaking for the first time since Dumbledore. I'm sorry, no, he doesn't. He's a month younger than Dudley, and Dudders doesn't turn 18 until the year after next. So, I guess I was honing in on this, because I've always just interpreted this as her, like, you know, her just, you know, again, constantly being so focused on her own son. But again, like, she understands the enchantment that Dumbledore, like, plays, like, when the letter and everything. But so a part of me is like, is there a tiny bit of Petunia who is like, no, it's too soon, he can't go?
That's interesting. Like, she doesn't want to let go yet.
Even if not for any sort of affection, just purely, I know a crazy guy wants to kill him. Even though I hate him, I don't want him dead.
Huh. Okay. I don't know. You don't think it's any sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of like remembering her sister. I don't think that she and her sister were, they didn't particularly like each other.
No, they didn't. Like, you know, she called her own sister a freak.
Yeah. So it wouldn't be, I don't know. That's interesting.
I don't recall this particular passage thinking anything other than a very superficial level, but a part of me wondered this time.
I think that was also probably some wonderful fan fiction that we could talk through. Okay, continue. Sorry.
No, and it's just, Dumbledore explains, Voldemort's back. I left him on your doorstep 15 years ago with a letter explaining about his parents' murder and expressing the hope that you would care for him as though he were your own.
Which they definitely did not.
Yeah. You did not do as I asked. You have never treated Harry as a son. He has known nothing but neglect and often cruelty at your hands. The best that can be said is that he has at least escaped the appalling damage you have inflicted upon the unfortunate boy sitting between you. Mic drop.
Yeah, I know. This was pretty, because definitely in the Dursleys' minds, they've treated Dudley like a prince, but yeah.
And it just goes to show that there are many different types of, like, neglect and abuse. Like, you know, I definitely have read articles about, you know, reformed, spoiled brats who like, resent their parents about, like, why weren't there any parameters? Why didn't they raise me to become a functioning adult and all that stuff? Or just the horror stories that just, you know, fill our screens with reality TV of all these spoiled brats who haven't learned anything.
Yeah, I mean, it does a disservice to somebody. In my personal life, know a few people that grew up kind of having everything. And then when you leave that situation, you have to figure it out on your own. Or let's say, you know, the parents are going to become in a bad financial situation. It really, people don't know how to function. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So, and then Dumbledore goes on, be like, you just have to let him come back one more time, and then the enchantment will be gone when he becomes of age and therefore becomes a man.
And Harry doesn't even have to stay with him that long, right? It's only like 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, like, again, until July 31st.
Okay.
And then it's like, well, Harry, time for us to be off. And Harry just says bye, and then in typical whimsical fashion, Dumbledore's like, and now, Harry, let us step out into the night and pursue that flighty temptress of adventure.
We're like, oh my god, this felt a little, I was like, Dumbledore, all right, we don't always have to say something whimsical, but.
But it's just part of who he is.
It is.
He loves being whimsical.
That's fine. We love him for it.
Well, even Percy in book one is like, mad, he's a genius. But yeah, he is mad.
Yeah, that's
a little.
Yeah, that's why we like.
Yeah. And then we move on to chapter 4, Horace Slughorn. So, thoughts on Horace?
Thoughts on Horace. Okay, so the little image in the book is he looks like a little couch. And because we know why. So I was like, this cracks me up. Like, I thought it was the funniest thing that he was like a little couch. So I had to find a clip to see how they represented this in the movie. And that's all I watched. I read it. So I didn't, it was like a minute and a half or something. And not as funny. Like, he legit was a couch. I was like, oh man, this is, so other than that, like, I can't really put a finger on Horace yet. And I feel like he might be one of those diabolical creatures in disguise, but I don't know. I don't know how I feel about him yet.
Yeah. So, but before we get to Horace, we've got a little bit of dialogue between Dumbledore and Harry. And, you know, they're kind of talking about, you know, the various events. And what is Dumbledore? Well, Harry's, like, asking questions. And what we got? So first important thing is, like, so tell me, Harry, your scar, has it been hurting? And Harry's like, no. And Dumbledore is actually, you know, kind of predicted this, because it's like, you know, it was very painful for Voldemort to possess you. Therefore, you know, because your heart is so good and you have such good emotions. And so now, you know, Voldemort is practicing occlumency against you.
Yeah, this is, I don't know, it goes kind of against the, not against, but I think I'm so trained to think, like, if Voldemort's near, the scar is hurting. So to kind of see that he's transitioned out of that was like, oh, okay. Interesting.
Well, it's not, Well, transition. Well, again, not by his own doing, but by Voldemort's. Voldemort is taking initiative to mentally and emotionally distance himself from Harry.
Yes. Yeah. No, just like the thought, whenever, you know, you think of Harry and a scar and Voldemort's near, we've had several books of like, oh, and now it's like not happening. So just gotta, evolution changes, all those things.
And then, let's see, what are we? So it's like, what are we doing here? And it's like, well, I have lost count of the number of times I've said in recent years, but we are once again one staff member short. We are here to persuade an old colleague of mine to come out of retirement and return to Hogwarts.
Good that Dumbledore has a sense of humor about himself. But yeah, so we're coming up in Horace's house.
Yep. And then they get to the point. Yeah. Daily Prophet said that Fudge has been sacked. Correct. He has been replaced, as I'm sure you also saw, by Rufus Scrimgeour, who used to be the head of the Auror office. Is he Do you think he's good? Asked Harry. An interesting question, said Dumbledore. He is able, certainly, a more decisive and forceful personality than Cornelius. Yes, but I know what you meant. Rupus is a man of action, and having fought for dark wizards for most of his working life, he does not underestimate Lord Voldemort. So he doesn't answer. He doesn't answer Harry's question.
Right, right. He does the kind of smart man's delicate dance around how he truly feels.
Yeah, and Harry doesn't have the balls at this point to point out blank, like, what did you argue about with Scrimgeour about?
Yeah, right, right.
Mm-hmm. And then Harry tries to ask, Professor, what happened here? I have no time to explain now. It is a thrilling tale. I wish to do it justice.
I thought that was pretty funny. Because he, and then he kind of is like, you know, he doesn't mean to be, he's not trying to be a jerk. He's just, I think he's sincere in that. Like, he wants to be very animated and tell the story the way he wants to tell it.
Yep. And then they talk about the BS safety pamphlet brochure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, did you find it useful? Not really. No, I thought not. You had not asked me, for instance, what is my favorite flavor of jam to check that I am indeed Professor Dumbledore and not an imposter.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
For the future reference, Harry, it is raspberry. Although, I, of course, if I were a Death Eater, I would have been sure to research my own jam preferences before impersonating myself. Which, not gonna lie, Dumbledore, raspberry jam is also my favorite.
Oh, that's, well, lovely. My personal favorite jam, I guess, is wild blueberry. So Dumbledore and I will differ. But that's, I just, Dumbledore and his cleverness, good for him.
Mm-hmm. And then what are Inferi? They are corpses, dead bodies that have been bewitched to do a dark wizard's bidding. Inferi have not been seen for a long time. However, not since Voldemort was last powerful. He killed enough people to make an army of them.
I think you can understand why I thought of the White Walkers when I read this.
Yeah. Indeed, which it's interesting. I think we've, or maybe not. I think Nat and I in Podcasters Landing obviously went because we've gotten to, you know, we've only seen at this point, besides the prologue, the White Walkers, the one that almost kills Jon, like in the like building of the Night's Watch, and then finally throws the flaming curtain on it. But anyway, we were talking about again the different notions of type of zombies and how. A lot of modern interpretations tend to try to treat zombies more like a virial disease to make it more like plausible. But the White Walkers in Game of Thrones are still very much in like the fantasy realm where it's not even just biting. It's just like enchantments that, you know, that keep them. And I appreciate the climate change analogy of the White Walkers that is not always present with you know, renditions of zombies in media and literature.
I don't know that one. I don't know that.
Because they're in the north and they're all coming, they're coming from the north, melting glaciers.
Okay. Interesting. I'd heard a zombie thing in consumerism, but I don't know where that went.
Okay. So they show up at the house and it looks like the house has been completely ransacked. So what did you originally think before, you know, before the whole Horace couch thing?
The chair, the cool chair.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess like, sorry, Harry, you gave it away on the front of the chapter with the cute little drawing. Like I knew he was gonna be somewhere, but it definitely felt like there was an attack and, you know, definitely made it look that way. So good on
Horace. Yeah, so the door is off its hinges. There's blood on the wall. Chandelier's been shattered. Just complete and utter mess. And then, I don't think so, said Dumbledore quietly. You mean he's still here somewhere? And you think, oh no, we're gonna like find a corpse or something.
Yeah.
A dead body somewhere. But then, without warning, Dumbledore swooped, plunging the tip of his wand into the seat of the overstuffed armchair, which yelled, ouch.
Yes, yeah. And here we have a little guy.
Yep. Good evening, Horace, said Dumbledore, straightening up again. There is no need to stick the wand in that hard, he said gruffly. Which I just, because my mind is in the gutter, I took that to a whole other level that I shouldn't have.
But no, I think that's great. That's usually where my mind is. I don't say it as much as I probably would like to.
Yep. So, what gave it away, he grunted. My dear Horace, if the Death Eaters had really come to call, the Dark Mark would have been sent over the house. So, anyway, we find out that, you know, Horace Slughorn, again, he was an old teacher. He has been kind of living on the lam, you know, for a year, like not even giving the Death Eaters the opportunity to try and find him.
Right. But we don't really know why.
No. Dumbledore keeps it general and just thinking, like, I think he would want to use your many talents to abate in, like, torture, murder, and many other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, yeah. And then we've got this, and then Dumbledore introduces Harry, and it's like, can we have a drink? And he's like, all right, one drink. And so we get this sort of, you know, again, Dumbledore wanting Horace to come out of retirement. And he's like, you know, I'm rheumatism too, can't move like I used to. Well, that's to be expected, old age, fatigue. And yet you must have moved fairly quickly to prepare such a welcome for us at such short notice. You can't have had more than 3 minutes warning. Two, didn't hear the intruder charm. I was taking a bath.
The details here. The details.
Yeah, which I'm an old man, Amulus, a tired old man who's earned the right to a quiet life and a few creature comforts, which, not gonna, can't argue with that.
Yeah, that's fine. We get it. We get it.
Yeah, and also, like I'm an old lady, so. For further context, Horace is a Taurus, like I am, and so, again, I do not fault him for his want of luxury.
No, you should not.
Yep. And almost like, you're not as old as I am, Horace. Well, maybe you ought to think about retirement yourself. And then he goes to the hand. And it's like, reactions not what they were, I see.
Damn.
Burn.
Yeah. Possibly literally on Dumbledore's hand. But yeah. Oh, man.
And we get a little interest where Harry notices for the first time on Dumbledore's other hand is this ring that's gold with a crack in it, and it's big and black.
All I could think of, and you're a witch, so this is what made it. I was like, well, he's got like black obsidian or like black tourmaline or something. He's like using a protective stone or some kind of crystal. I don't know. That's what my first thought.
Yeah, and Harry notices it, and then Harry also notices Slughorn kind of looking at the ring, possibly as if he recognizes it. Slughorn's eyes lingered for a moment on the ring, too, and Harry saw a tiny frown momentarily crease his wide forehead.
So there is definitely a story with this ring. We just don't know what it is yet.
So, yep. And then Horace goes on to, I've been moving, you know, never staying in one place more than a week. Moved from Muggle House to Muggle House. The owner of this place is on holiday in the Canary Islands. It's quite easy once you know one simple freezing charm on those absurd burglar alarms they use instead of sneaker stones, and make sure the neighbors don't spot you bringing in the piano.
Oh my goodness.
That just made me think of my husband and I. Recently, we went to our independent bookstore and they were having a little like sort of concert of a local musician performing Bach. You know, Bach while, you know, near the cafe while everyone was, you know, socializing. And so, you know, this was the first time my husband been at that bookstore. So we go a little earlier, you know, get coffee and stuff, sit down. He's like, well, where's the piano? And I'm like, oh, I'm sure the musician's probably going to bring his keyboard when he comes. And he's like, oh, I thought there was going to be like a legit piano forte. And I'm like, sorry, honey, you're just way too fancy and sophisticated.
Yeah, like a little baby grand. That would be sweet. That would be, well, you know, it's
fine. Yep. And Dumbledore's trying to, you know, again, poke holes, and you're like, you're not an old feeble man. And Horace is like, if you're going to tell me my life would be more peaceful than at that pestilential school, you can save your breath, Albus. Which, he's also not wrong.
Yeah, no, he's definitely, yeah, that's exactly, yeah.
But he's basing it in, like, some funny rumors have reached me since Dolores Umbridge left. If that's how you treat teachers these days, I think you, Horace, would have known better than to stride into a forest and call a horde of angry centaurs filthy half-breeds.
It was strange to me that he referenced Dolores, because I got the impression that nobody particularly liked her, nor and kind of knew that she was kind of a jerk. So the fact that he brought her up raised my suspicions, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just being suspicious.
That is interesting, because I guess it's the question of how, obviously, Harry got an unpleasantly close image of what Umbridge is really like. I guess the question what we should think about is all her, like, you know, her pink tweed and her love of kittens and all that stuff. Like, does that facade work at, like, if you're looking at her from a distance? Or, like, I guess the question is, like, is she able to keep a lid on her, like, sociopathy to, like, where that works to, again, until you get really, really close? We don't know. I guess that's the question.
Yeah, maybe it's a mask that she presented for some folks and not others. So interesting. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. And then Dumbledore gives up and like, are you leaving? No, I was just wondering if I might use your bathroom. And
weird. I mean, not weird to use the bathroom, but it's, I don't know. It's weird.
Again, what I find weirder is Kevin's uncanny obsession with Dumbledore's bathroom habits.
Which, I'd rather just pretend they don't exist. So,
yeah, because he uncanny, yeah, interest in how Dumbledore does number two.
But. Oh well, Kevin, keep wondering on that. That's great. I think I'm fine. I don't need to know.
Yeah. Yep. So that leaves Harry and Slughorn together, and Slughorn's like, "Don't think I don't know why he's brought you here," and Harry's like,
Yeah, because he has no idea. He's like, to see a couch, man? I don't know.
And Slughorn does the same thing. You look very like your father, except for your eyes. You've got my mother's eyes, yeah. Yes, well, you shouldn't have favorites as a teacher, of course, but she was one of mine, your mother.
Aww.
Lily Evans, one of the brightest I ever taught. Vivacious, you know, charming girl. I used to tell her she ought to have been in my house. Very cheeky answers I used to get back to. And then we find out Horace was once the head of Slytherin House.
What? Yeah, I guess, you know, Dumbledore does say Snape is cool with him, so that Snape is a Slytherin. So I guess I shouldn't have been so surprised to realize this cat would be a Slytherin, but I was.
Yep. And then he goes on to talk about how talented Sirius was, but Sirius was in Gryffindor and his brother Regulus was in Slytherin. It's like, you know, I got his brother Regulus when he came along, but I've liked the set. He sounded like an enthusiastic collector who had been outbid at auction.
Yeah, it's not the first time that he's referred to like that.
Actually, this is, I remember Amanda and Kevin, for their, like, you know, questions from listeners, they actually took my question about Horace Slughorn, because from what we see of him from this chapter, you could interpret his, again, approach towards his favoritism with students as either malignant or benevolent, even though obviously on general principle favoritism isn't good. I kind of made the argument that, you know, at least from what we know here, you know, there's nothing wrong with, like, having favorite students and having relationships, and that these kids certainly benefited from his, you know, tutelage and, you know, and connections and things like that.
Yeah. Weird to call people collections or, yeah, or whatever, but the set, it's weird.
So just when he's starting to, like, redeem himself by, like, oh, your mother was my favorite, and he's like, your mother was Muggle-born, thought she must have been a pureblood, she was so good.
Yeah, and Harry gets defensive there.
Yeah, and it's like people, like, I've had Muslim colleagues who have legit told me things like, people have said, you're Muslim, but you're so nice.
I shouldn't say that. I was going to say, I've met a lot more mean Christian people in my life, so I don't know. I don't know anything. I don't know a lot of Muslim people, to be very honest with you, but I know a lot of very mean Christian people.
Yeah. And so what do we got? We've got Horace, like, listing off all of his, like, star pupils and where they are. They're, like, everywhere from government to the media to, you know, sports with Quidditch. Like, they're everywhere.
It's becoming a little more clear why Dumbledore's intentions, I think, with this.
Yeah, basically, in bringing Harry, he was, like, dangling the carrot of, like, look what you could have again. Like, all, you know, you've had this, you know, clearly Horace Slughorn tends to veer on the side of being social. Yes. Unlike you.
Unlike me, who you have to pull teeth, yes.
Yeah, so him being presented with, like, as Dumbledore's, like, the crown jewel, the chosen one, as one of his favorites.
It's like he's kind of a, and pardon the language, but kind of like a star fucker. Like, you know, he's really, that's the thing. He wants to be close to greatness in any way he can.
The groupie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's, again, it can be a really yucky interpretation. And then also, even at the most malevolent form, there are still issues of, like, you know, elitism and class and stuff. Because like Lily Evans, she didn't come from a rich family. It was just her talent. And, you know, that distinguished herself for Slughorn. But still, there are some issues of privilege that are problematic.
Her proximity, I don't know if to James Potter was probably kind of helped her cause a little bit too.
Maybe that too. And then Harry's just like, you know, basically, you know, like a real Slytherin, Slughorn is interested in self-preservation, and he has trepidations about, like, going to teach at Hogwarts, because that is basically saying I'm aligning myself with Dumbledore, which up until this point he seems to have been able to stay neutral.
I think he's on the right side, which also, this is just kind of a situation with him. Obviously the right side is pretty clear, but maybe it isn't always. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I reckon the staff are safer than most people with Dumbledore's headmaster. He's supposed to be the only one Voldemort ever feared. Well, yes, that is true. And I suppose one could argue that as I have not joined the Death Eaters, he must not be named, can hardly count me a friend. So yeah, like, literally cost-benefit analysis going on. He's like, if Voldemort knows I've been joined by now, then he knows I'm not gonna. So what's the point of trying to stay neutral? I might as well benefit from Dumbledore's protection.
Well, there you go.
Yep. And then Dumbledore comes back. It's like, oh, there you are, Albus. You were been in there a very long time. Upset stomach? No, I was merely, like, your face.
Like, let's just not. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm very, like, I just, there are some things that it's just like, let's just.
That was Kevin's response as well. Like, why do we have to talk about it? Like, right. I talk about it as a reader all the time, but you're not supposed to talk about it.
Right. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, that's pretty funny. Oh yeah.
He's like, no, I do love knitting patterns.
Well, like, from the magazine. Save it for later, sir. Dumbledore, you lost some points with me here, but that's okay.
And so Dumbledore's like, well, time to go. I know a lost cause when I see one. It's the typical, like, reverse psychology. This reminded me of me when I was in Morocco haggling and the person didn't want to lower to where I want. And I'm like, okay, bye-bye. I keep walking. But finally they're like, all right.
Oh, wow.
You can have it for your price. So that's basically what Dumbledore's doing. He's like, bye, Horace, bye. And then, you know, have a good night. And then finally, Slughorn runs up and is like, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, that's, I think, your analogy. I mean, I can't beat that. So
mm-hmm. And he's like, wonderful, then Horace, we shall see you on the 1st of September, and I want a pay raise, Slughorn screams. Oh, from the
that's fine. I think that Dumbledore could probably pay most people, like, just pay these poor teachers that are they're big risk.
I'm assuming he pays them a lot for the occupational hazard that goes into this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see Dumbledore as being the type of shitty politician that wants to treat teachers like scum like they do in Oklahoma during the walkout.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, the teachers are not treated very well, for sure.
No, they don't. I just going down the rabbit hole of, I recently watched a clip. Don't know how old it was, but just, was it specifically Oklahoma or maybe, like, just South or Midwest, but just, you know, the inability for them to teach, not only just monetary, like, budgets and stuff, but literally having to do, like, class walkouts because some student is, like, so going batshit crazy. Oh, and God. To a point that they're a threat to the other students. So it's like, and also just other things, like, you know, you can't teach a student when they're hungry. You can't teach a student when they're cold. You can't teach them when it's crisis mode at home or like every other place except the classroom.
Right. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Halt. You learn it in therapy. Make sure you're not feeling one of those things because you can't really think very well.
Was it halt?
Hungry, angry, lonely, tired.
Okay, I think I knew halt, like, my economics professors, like, don't post anything on social media if you're hungry, angry, high, or tired.
There we go. There we
go. Or drunk.
Yes. That's good advice for a lot of situations.
It is. I guess that's one thing I pride myself on is I'm not generally a impulsive person. Like, if something really, really pisses me off, I will just be like, I will give this 3 days, and if I'm just as passionate about it, then I can go batshit crazy.
And I am a Cancer and a Scorpio, and I'm all water. And I have no earth in my chart, I just learned. So there we go.
No earth at all?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. So I'm very not grounded individual.
Alrighty then. And Dumbo's like, did you like Horus, Harry? And Harry's like,
Yeah. He kind of doesn't, he's like, the guy was a couch, I don't know.
Yeah, Horace said Dumbledore likes his comfort. He also likes the company of the famous, the successful, and the powerful. He enjoys the feeling that he influences these people. He's never wanted to occupy the throne himself. He prefers the back seat, more room to spread out, you see. He used to handpick favorites at Hogwarts, sometimes for their ambition or their brains, sometimes for their charm or their talent, and he had an uncanny knack for choosing those who would go on to become outstanding in their various fields. Horace formed a kind of club of his favorites, which himself at the center made introductions, forging useful contacts between members. I tell you all this not to turn you against Slughorn, but to put you on your guard. He will undoubtedly want to collect you, Harry. You will be the jewel of his collection, the boy who lived, or as they call you these days, the chosen one.
Okay, so reminded me, I saw Elvis, the movie, a couple, I think, last week, and it's basically the story of, you know, his manager and how he took advantage of him, and, you know, and this feels like...
As some managers are wont to do.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just such a drag to, like, so let's hope Harry does not fall to Slughorn's, you know. I don't think he will, but kind of putting him in that context makes me feel a little less of a fan of slugs.
Again, even I admit, even at the most benevolent interpretation, it's still wrought with issues of privilege and elitism and exclusion.
Yeah.
So then they apparate up to, you know, the outskirts of the burrow, and they decide to have a little chat in the broomstick shed.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, this is kind of where the serious talk happens, and also where I think it's, he talks about Harry had spent nearly all his time at the Dursleys lying on his bed, refusing meals, and staring at the misted window full of the chill emptiness that he had come to associate with Dementors, which is depression. He's depressed.
Yeah, so, but Harry, I am pleased and a little proud of how well you seem to be coping after everything that has happened at the Ministry. Permit me to say that I think Sirius would have been proud of you.
Oh,
so cute. Harry swallowed. His voice seemed to have deserted him. He did not think he could stand to discuss Sirius.
Poor guy.
It was cruel that you and Sirius had such a short time together. Yeah, and a whole book was devoted to him, and you just kill him off 2 books later.
Cruel world. Cruel wizarding world.
Yeah, again, at least Sirius should have been able to make it to the end of book 7.
Yeah, that would have been great.
But anyway. And it's just hard, Harry said finally in a low voice, to realize he won't write to me again.
Ugh, that's such a very gross grief moment. I mean, you and I have dealt with our own grief, and you think about those little things.
Yeah. I went to a poetry reading at the same independent bookstore, and it was very good, but one of the lady's poems she used a lot of imagery of cicadas. Oh. And that automatically made me think of the dearly departed Bacon who loved the cicada, you know?
Yeah.
You know, hatching or migration. What was it?
Oh, I don't remember. But
I don't even know what it's called every 17 years, but yeah.
The Great Rising.
the Great Rise Ascent. Yeah. But yeah, just because Bacon loves cicadas so much, his record, he once caught 7 in one day.
Oh my gosh, look at him. That's
yeah,
funny.
and we're like, are they like, they're not like technically bad for kitties, but their exoskeleton is very tough and it's just not maybe the greatest. But anyway, again, the poem had absolutely nothing to do with that, but just the all the talk of cicadas, and I'm like, oh, Bacon.
I know.
We hardly knew ye.
Yeah, poor Bacon. I think of my guava bear very often, and those moments when you lose her and you see something that you're like, oh, they used to sit there and now they don't. Yeah. So it's very sad.
Yep. And but Harry's just like, you know, it could be me next, couldn't it? But if it is, I'll make sure that I take as many Death Eaters with me as I can, and Voldemort too, if I can manage it.
Damn.
Spoken like both your mother and father's son and Sirius's true godson, said Dumbledore. I take my hat off to you, or I would if I were not afraid of showering you in spiders.
What the hell? He's like weird in this. He's reading knitting magazines and hats full of spiders. I would be like, Dumbledore, it was good knowing you. You have
His hat's full of spiders. It's just the broom shed has lots of spiders, and in his pointed hat will disturb their webs.
I read that as he had like spiders under his hat, and I'm like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? Okay, now it makes more sense.
Oh, was I like you? That would have seriously damaged your image of Dumbledore and how much you hate spiders.
Oh my God, one was setting a trap for me last night. So they don't like me either. It was right in my front door.
One was setting a trap for you.
I had my front door and I was going to go out, and sure enough, there was one that's dropped down in the middle of my front door. I see him hanging there building a web in front of my front door, and I was like, because I would the spider has moved on to better things,
greener pastures.
But yes, me and my nemesis spider. So at first, thank you for reminding me of this. Yeah, it was a whole thing.
You would not have fared well in my childhood, where there was a little like potted like succulent or something next to like the back door, which you had to go out to go to the pool, and in between like the bottom of the door frame and that little succulent was a spider web, but not just any spider web, a black widow's web.
Every time
I go to the pool, I just have to 1, 2, 3 run.
You gave me, like, there were chills. You didn't, I mean, our listeners did not see that.
Yeah, yeah, vitriol reaction.
Oh, okay.
And then she had an egg sack, and then finally my dad had to go kill it.
Oh, my God. Oh, okay. All right, we got to move on. I'm going to freak out. Okay. The Daily Prophet. What are we talking about? Oh, my God.
So, what does Dumbledore say last thing about the Daily Prophet? Nah, blah, blah, blah. Dumbledore says, they may can guess, but still no one knows exactly what the prophecy, except you and me.
And they're doing a pretty good job guessing so far.
Yeah, and Dumbledore says, you know, you should be careful, but I think you should tell Ron and Hermione. Like, they ought to know. You do them a disservice by not confiding something this important to them.
Quite the change of tune from the last book.
Yeah, maybe he's seen the error of his ways.
Maybe. Good for him for correcting it, though.
Yep, and then we leave with this little tidbit of Dumbledore will be giving Harry special lessons.
Yeah, no more Mr. Snape, so.
No more Mr. Snape with occlumency.
Yeah, which Harry's relieved. Because he thinks he may never have to deal with, he might not have to deal with Snape all semester, and don't count your chickens or your owls. So
before they are delivered.
Yeah.
Which ought to be some point later today. And Dumbledore just says, you know, Molly and Arthur are going through a lot of inconveniences to keep you here. They don't care, but just please don't wander away from the Burrow unnecessarily.
Yeah, that's a good thing to, you know, don't be crazy. Don't fly your car into anything. Don't do any nonsense like that. So,
Yep. And I see a light in the kitchen. Let us not deprive Molly any longer of the chance to deplore how thin you are.
That was pretty cute.
And thus ends chapter 4.
We're getting a lot of Dumbledore action early.
Yep.
That scares me.
Scares you? Yes. Why?
Because I feel like I know Dumbledore's fate in this book, so I'm
boo.
I don't know for sure, but I feel like I feel like it's pretty clear that this is the one he leaves us in. So,
aww. Well, anyway, so let us go to our first exercise, Gothic Geek Out.
Overall, I thought Horace's house upon arrival was very Gothic. You know, it looked disheveled, but then there was still some wealth or to it, because Horace has his preferences. So that was the most Gothic. Dursley's house isn't particularly Gothic, or at least I don't imagine it to be that way.
No. Again, it was a challenging one, but I was able to come up with one that I was proud of. And one was the fact that we were dealing with Sirius's will and the possible complications of the inheritance, because, you know, the death of someone and inheritance is often a big triggering event that causes a protagonist to have to go trudge out to a haunted mansion of some kind.
Dan, you are just like, I'm so mad because one of the foundational Gothic works is the Castle of Otranto, and that's kind of an essential part of it.
The inheritance and curse. And specifically, you know, fighting over inheritance, because like, it's like, this is what Sirius wanted, but can Sirius overpower centuries old pure blood enchantments to make sure that the house doesn't go to Bellatrix or anyone else?
You win. Not that it's a contest, but you win the Gothic geek out for this week, because that's a very good one.
Yeah, because again, like, even your favorite Horrid, it's triggered by, you know, triggered by death of the father and going to the mom family's old house.
Right. I'm trying to think. Is there one in Dracula? There is a lot of documents in Dracula. But
well, he is a lawyer, and isn't he dealing with real estate?
He's dealing with real estate, yeah. But I'm not sure if anything was like bequeathed or requested. I don't know which one.
Yeah.
On anybody during that. But anyway. Damn. That was a good one.
Alrighty then. And then our next exercise is Tarot of the Day, which I think we've done this one in the past, but I still kept with it. The Five of Swords.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. You just like disappeared and came back. I don't know what the hell that was.
Oh, okay, whatever. So yeah, Five of Swords. So the Five of Swords turns up when you have had a feeling, have had a falling out, disagreement, or conflict, and you're walking away with a sense of sadness and loss. You may be upset and resentful over the heated words you said and now wish you could take back. Bad blood and general ickiness hang over you as your relations have turned sour. Even if you won the argument or came out the apparent victor, you realize that you have lost as much or more than your opponent. This battle has cost you trust, respect, or dignity, and isolated you. As you try to pick up the pieces and set the conflict behind you, you find it's more difficult than you thought. Others have lost faith in you and are keeping their distance. In some ways, I think of Slughorn.
That's who I thought of too. Yeah.
Because he's in this position where, you know, he's surrounded by all these famous people and all these great connections. But when push comes to shove, like, there was no one he could have, like, relied on to, like, you know, hey, can I, like, crash on your couch because the Death Eaters might possibly be after me? You know, like, there was no one he could go to for that sort of severe situation, and he's just been totally on his own living, you know, week by week in different houses. So there is a sense, I feel like there's a sense of tragedy in that, you know, he surrounded himself with all these connections and supposed friends, but when push come to shove, none of them came to a meaningful fruition when a real emergency happened.
Yeah, that tends to be the case with people of that mindset too. It's just like you're being a collector of objects and they just have no sort of repayment for you, really. So
I was reading an article in Psychology Today about it. It's called The Instrumentality Perspective.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
It's basically the idea of when you objectify people enough in, you know, using them to fulfill your own or to achieve your own goals.
Okay.
And that, you know, particularly in the context that article was talking about in romantic relationships, and that's a bad approach to have in relationships because, you know, number one, you know, a person doesn't stay useful forever. You know, certain life stages change and all those things. So anyway, that made me think of, you know, he, you know, that in his career, Slughorn had all these accolades and, you know, sense of accomplishment, but when things got really bad, none of that amounted to anything in any sort of meaningful support.
Yeah. I mean, hard to say anything more, but that Slughorn is definitely the one that seems to be most reminiscent, and he doesn't have any, but, you know, like, he's hopping house to house instead of having somebody to, he doesn't have a grim old place, you know, he doesn't have a place to hide, so.
Yeah. The advice of the Five of Swords is to pick your battles. You may be tempted to fight every conflict to ensure you get your way or to prove you are right or defend yourself when you are feeling challenged or threatened. However, most experts agree choosing your battles wisely is a much better way of life than engaging in every disagreement. So, I don't know. Kind of also thinking of Slughorn in his sense of he's trying to, again, challenge everyone from the Death Eaters to Dumbledore him, you know, to Dumbledore, like, not wanting to get involved with, you know, anyone, but finally realizing that it doesn't benefit me to, like, you know, be at odds with Dumbledore. I just need to do what he asks me to do.
Yeah, pretty powerful guy to, like, I mean, in Voldemort, Dumbledore is asking him to take a teaching position, you know, and, like, come back to Hogwarts. Like, Voldemort's asks are a little darker.
Darker, and again, Dumbledore is not asking for anything like Order of the Phoenix stuff or anything
right
like that, but Slughorn was so terrified to even have any affiliation with Dumbledore by even just teaching, even though he wouldn't have crap to do with the Order of the Phoenix.
And you can't, kind of can't blame him entirely, but it's like, you know, I don't know. Come on, yeah. Slugs, pick a side.
Slugs.
That's my name for him. Slugs.
Okay. Well, I doubt you noticed in that little clip you saw, but in the movies, if you see poor Slughorn's wand, the tip of it is kind of like has two little prongs that kind of look like, you know, a slug eyes.
Oh, that's cute. I didn't, you know, I just saw him like transform from the couch to the like puffy outfitted guy.
Yeah, I don't own any Harry Potter wands and don't intend to, but of all of them, if I wanted to like have a little collection, I would want Horace Slughorn's wand because it is pretty dope.
I'll have to peep it because I don't know what it looks like.
Yep. And then the next one is, of course, the card I pulled for Black Moon Astrology cards, which, let's see, it was a planetary card, or more specifically, it was the sun.
Oh, that's a big card.
Yes, big card. And let's see if I can. So, the sun is at the center of our lives, just as it is traditionally in the astrological chart. This is why the placement of the sun is the most significant, you know, in your zodiac. The sun is our spirit, our personality. It represents, along with Uranus, the animating flash of life. The sun signifies who we essentially are. It is also the need to express who we are. In ancient belief, the sun is Amen-Ra, the god among gods, whose name leads to Amen, the word at the end of a prayer. Which, again, because Amen, actually, that root, A-M-N, that root of that word, of those three consonants in Arabic, means, like, security.
Oh, okay.
And so Amin in Arabic means, like, secure or safe, and that's my husband's name, Amin.
Oh, cool. That's, I didn't know. I think, did I know that? I don't remember. I called him Amir one time. So.
Oh, no, Amir means prince in Arabic.
Yes. Yeah, that's what you, I remember that because I called him that.
Again, forgive, I'm a linguistic nerd. Leave me alone.
No, I love it. It's great. It's very helpful to me.
The sun rules over the condition of our bodies. It is the return to light, the ability to transform and rise again. Well, just our bodies, certain transformation from chairs into humans.
There we go. I don't know why it's so funny to me. It's so funny. Oh, man.
Yeah, when the sun card presents itself in a spread, it adds an encouraging spin to any reading. The sun is all that is good. It is the positivity that trumps anything negative. Well, I guess in this way, Dumbledore is kind of being the sun because Dumbledore is offering a much more attractive alternative than Slughorn's, you know, current existence, but it just takes a little nudging for him to realize that there's no point in me staying neutral because already, like, Voldemort probably thinks that, yeah, it's a no.
Yeah, he, I mean, and he always kind of does the thing where he takes a more positive spin in situations rather than kind of gloom and doom, mm-hmm. unless there is no other way.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this card also implies an aptitude for acting or just a period where dramatic ability and creative leadership could greatly benefit your mission. Well, this just makes me think of how creative Slughorn was in orchestrating the ransacking of his own place.
Yes, very true, very true. He was pretty creative.
He definitely is one that veers towards the theatrical.
I can't love him for that. I love a good theatrical person, so I love it a little bit.
But yeah, that's all I've got. Any other thoughts?
No, I think the son and kind of like a foundational person, I'm trying to think. I'm not going to call Voldemort the son because that seems he's like totally the opposite. He's the suck of life. I'm trying to think of any sort of other thing. I can't. The son does make me think of, you know, fire and Gryffindor and things like that. So that's pretty much all there.
Alrighty then, and then we move on to our final exercise, fan fiction time.
All right.
What were yours?
Well, I only had one. I usually only have one. There was one I kind of thought about, but I feel like I'm a little. It was just not going to be. It was just a stupid thing, so I'm not even gonna mention it. But what if Dumbledore insisted that Harry Potter continue his occlumency lessons with Snape, given all they know and kind of his previous thing, rather than transition to him?
Oh, that would be not fun for Harry, but that would be amusing to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, the only way that that could happen is that Dumbledore would have to be twisting Snape's arm behind the scenes that, like, you're going to teach him and you're going to teach him for real this time, not just the bullshit you were doing last year.
Yeah, there's a lot of complexity with, I mean, especially given, I feel like, what we know about Snape, what we know, and I'm using air quotes, about Snape and his kind of allegiance to Voldemort. So it would be very, I don't know. I can't, this is the thing I can't really figure out. And I don't want to yet, because I feel like I'm very close to understanding more about Snape and his kind of some of the allegiance I see in the Harry Potter fandom to Snape. But I would like it to reveal itself rather than me figure it, you know, try to speculate.
Yeah.
So that was my fan fiction. I don't know.
Yeah. I was thinking, what if Fudge had not been sacked? What if we were still floundering along with Fudge trying to, you know, do damage control?
Do we think that, like, Hogwarts would still be standing? Like,
Well, I think at that point, I think Fudge would just give Dumbledore full reign. It's like, I'm not touching Hogwarts or any of that, and just trying to do, you know, again, all those sort of things that the Ministry's already doing, you know.
Yeah.
But again, there's the tradition, like Boris Johnson resigning, there's a tradition in British politics that when you screw up really, really badly or deal with a lot of scandals, you are shamed into resigning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unlike in American politics, where people are just like, I don't care if people think I'm terrible, which, not that you want to be a victim to the mob, but again, they think you're terrible for a legit reason.
Right. Yeah, that does put people in an odd spot. Fudge was still there. I don't know. I mean, because he changed his tune a little bit at the end of the last book, so.
Mm-hmm. Like, because he couldn't ignore it because he physically saw Voldemort. So it's like he was in a position where it's like, oh, crap.
Right. He kind of had to change.
Yeah,
I feel like we would definitely not be in a good position. I wonder if the things, same like kind of things, would have played out with
I guess the question is now that Fudge is aware of everything that's going on, I guess my question is would Fudge still like once you get past and we now accept the premise that Voldemort's back, would Fudge be competent enough to do all the things that basically Scrimgeour is doing right now? And, you know, we're meant to see Fudge as like this bumbling old fool that maybe is good at schmoozing, but not necessarily good at, you know, leading a troubled country. So, but that's what he has advisors for. So, I guess it's just the question that once you get past the, oh, Voldemort's back, like, would Fudge be doing, you know, as good of a job as Scrimgeour?
I think not. I feel like Fudge is a kind of person that gets easily overwhelmed, and Scrimgeour seems like boom, boom, we're ticking things off the list and getting it done kind of person.
Yes, probably right. And then I just thought of another one of what if Horace still said no?
I don't know if I know the full repercussions of that yet. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing where I hesitated bringing it up because there would be ramifications, but just right now it's like, oh, well, we still have a vacancy at Hogwarts and who would fill it?
Right. Petunia Dursley. She changed her mind all of a sudden. She was like, I'm ready. I'm all in. Muggle teaching. Oh my God, that would be horrible.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. All right. But that's all I had. And thus this concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time where we'll be discussing chapters 5 and 6, An Excess of Phlegm and Draco's Detour.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. We shall see. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.